Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to be welcoming our next speaker, Dr. Romanelli. He is a professor at Dr. Philip Frost Department of Dermatology and Cutaneous Surgery and is board certified in both dermatology and dermatopathology. He has an extensive background in dermatology and dermatopathology with a special expertise in psoriasis, histopathology of wound healing, and deposition disorders. Please welcome Dr. Romanelli.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I want to thank the organizer for the invitation and all of you here. So I'm from Italy. I came to the United States in 1984, and then first California, then Florida, and I trained here at the University of Miami in pathology for 5 years. Then I did 1 year of medicine, and then 3 years of dermatology. So this is me last month reading slides to show you my strong interest in pathology at the microscope. And because of my training in pathology, and I would say a very good training, I was lucky in immunohistochemistry. I tried to combine both the clinical and pathological observation, and especially I'm intrigued by the potential of doing biopsies, staining for a special marker, and see which biologics we should prescribe. This is something I'm thinking about for 10 years at least. And now that we have so many biologics, I think it could be interesting. So in 2005, I put together a psoriasis biologics clinics here in Miami at the County Hospital, Jackson Memorial Hospital, was associated with the University of Miami. And this clinic was seen or intended or aimed at so-called indigent patients, underprivileged patients, because it's a county hospital. It was supposed to be biologics only. The clinic is still going. It's once a month. That's the little building by the main campus at Jackson Memorial Hospital. And so once a month, a good 17 years now, more than 650 patients, current probably 450, maybe not too many for your numbers, but still it's an interesting clinic to see patients with no funds and to be able to prescribe biologics to them. And again, and we have five residents every third Tuesday of the month in the afternoon from 1 to 5, and the idea is to do biologics only. Moderate to severe and severe psoriasis. So this clinic, we published it also in the Journal of American Academy of Dermatology, some of the features, January 2015, presented at the Academy of Dermatology a few times. A lot of other institutions came and asked how we were able to do it. There was a big effort to get support from the companies, to get some donations, and also we were able to get some funds from the money that the hospital Jackson gets every time you buy something in Dade County, yesterday, last night, later today. There is a tax per dollar, and 0.05 cents every dollar go to Jackson for big, let's say, specialties like trauma, like transplant, but we were able to get a little portion to help our clinic. And so also it's very good for our residents to first year, 3 months, they already know I have to confirm all the biologics, all the tests, all the potential side effects. They know when to switch and what to do. So this is my background with the psoriasis. And in this clinic, we see patients with, as I said, very severe psoriasis. And here, some numbers to say that we still see naive patients, because in this clinic, again, since they are with no funds, they come from Central America, South America, other areas of Miami, and they're completely covered with psoriasis. This is totally different than the other setting where I see patients with psoriasis, which is the private clinic of the University of Miami, where many patients come from other offices, they change insurances, sometimes they want to come to the university, so they're not as severe as the patients we see in the biologic clinic for indigent patients. A little bit of background about the psoriasis pathogenesis that I'm sure you already know very well. Usually these kind of complicated graphs from nice articles, and I put the references. And we know plasmacytodendritic cells could be part of the beginning of the process. And plasmacytodendritic cells, to me, are extremely interesting cells. And when I mentioned that I liked immunohistochemistry, I want to emphasize that even for plasmacytodendritic cells, we have an immunohistochemistry marker, CD123, that we can identify in biopsies. And then myeloid dendritic cells, and then the IL-23, TNF, 12, TH17, 22, and then this severe condition still pretty present in many of our patients. So this was the so-called ladder of shame at the beginning when we started also our clinic in 2005 with topicals, systemic therapy, effective but pretty serious side effects. Phototherapy still effective in combination. And then you probably saw this picture many times, the biologics that luckily changed the outcome of psoriasis, convenient dosing administration. And the very first biologic was approved when? 2003, right? In the United States. It was Alefacept, Amiviv, and now removed from the market for quite a few years, intramuscular, and then all the other biologics. Here is a list of some of them were approved, but in the last couple of years, with more tremendous advancement, I thought we already had some really good biologics to treat our patients, but for some reason, there is need for more. And this is what we're going to talk today. And then at the end, I want to mention my passion for biopsying psoriasis. I don't know how many of you biopsy psoriasis. Probably very few, right? I think, I hope, I dream it will be the future for something called personalized medicine, target therapy, tailor-made medicine. Because we have so many now, how do you decide which one you wanna prescribe? We need something objective to try to get the best biologic. We don't want to prescribe because of other different reasons that I don't know. We're not gonna mention. So topical medications, new biologic topicals recently, tapinarof 1% cream approved September 2022, aryl hydrocarbon receptor agonist modulates the expression of interleukin-17 and the skin barrier proteins filaggrin and loricrin. Filaggrin, as you know, is very important in many skin conditions, and the indication is plaque psoriasis in adults. It's a paper from Dr. Mark Lebel, who was here a couple of days ago at the University of Miami, gave a fantastic talk. And mechanism of action, the tapinarof cream interferes, block the HR molecule. You see here the molecules, the nucleus, the gene expression. And then it works on interleukin-17A, interleukin-17F, which potentially are the two most important culprit of psoriasis, and we'd see the other injectable biologics that are not approved yet, but I work in Europe. At least I have two brothers. One of my brothers is a chairman of dermatology at the University of Pisa, Italy. And in Europe, interleukin-17A and F as target are very important, and the patients respond really well. Then an antioxidant response and barrier proteins. So here, study design, patients with plaque psoriasis, 18, 75 years, mild to moderate severe psoriasis, BSA 3 to 20%, primary endpoint, PGA treatment success defined as a PGA score of 0 clear or 1 almost clear and more than 2 grade improvement at week 12, and then secondary endpoints. But the idea is that tapinarof works really well compared to the vehicle, definitely. And primary endpoint here, you see again the graphs. Tapinarof is the purple, vehicle is the blue one. Looking at this graph, you can see tremendous improvement. And I'm sure you're going to see all these graphs, all these talks many times in the near future with these dinners, with these pharma dinners. I have to say I'm not such a great fan of all these studies, clinical trials. They're definitely important, and please forgive me if I say something unorthodox, but in our clinic, we don't have any inclusion criteria, exclusion criteria. We treat patients, I want to say, from the trenches, real-world patients, and to me, the important thing is to give a medication and to see that the patients come back and the skin is clear. So tremendous respect for clinical trials, for results, because we need them. At the same time, we treat the patients, and as a pathologist, quite a few times when I make some diagnosis under the microscope, I'm told my colleagues, clinician, oh, really? But we treat patients, we don't treat slides. So to me, at the same time, we treat patients, we don't treat graphs or results. So by here, some clinical pictures about tapinarof baseline. Lots of psoriasis, hand psoriasis, week 4 improvement, and week 12 almost completely clear. And same on this patient in the trunk, classic well-demarcated, scaly red plaques, and then a baseline, and then a week 4 improve, and at week 12 much improve. So some adverse outcomes, including folliculitis, contact dermatitis, and headache. I don't know if you already prescribed it or what's your experience. Apparently, more than folliculitis, some of these side effects look like milia. And this is something I discussed with Dr. Lamholt briefly a couple of days ago. So interesting that no major side effects. Safety. Folliculitis again, nasopharyngitis, contact dermatitis, and then minimal headache, pruritus, and influenza. This is due to minimal systemic absorption. Up to 96% of patients were below the quantifiable limit at week 12. So a very low rate of treatment discontinuation, and definitely this is important improvement to topical steroids, which we know can give side effects with atrophy, striae, and major issues. When I was a resident, the calcineurin inhibitor were approved, and that was a tremendous, supposed to be improvement compared to giving topical steroids. So here, even better. Another topical, new drug in dermatology, recently approved, roflumilast. Phosphodiesterase 4 inhibitor, downregulation of TNF-alpha, interferon gamma, interleukin 17 and 23, indication plaque psoriasis, intertriginous area, but all is a little more complicated to treat, and definitely difficult to treat with topical steroids because of the side effects, and also patient of 12 years of age and older. And inverse psoriasis, major target. I think also it's interesting for all these new treatments and also the old biologic to see this little niche that they tried to develop and successfully so. So inverse psoriasis could be a really good indication for roflumilast. And the dose is 0.3% in a 60 gram tubes. Another mechanism of action picture here from this article from Dr. Milakovic. And this is phosphodiesterase 4 inhibitor, same as an oral medication, as you know, and another topical medication. So efficacy and safety. Intervention, 439 patients treated, roflumilast, placebo, and you see the numbers are extremely in favor of the roflumilast compared to placebo, 42.4%, 61%, and 37.5% versus 6.9%. So from this study, robust efficacy on IgA success in both phase 3 studies. So, and published in JAMA. And highly effective in intertriginous plaques. Again, interesting potential selective indication for this topical, which you know, inverse psoriasis is not so common, but it's not so uncommon. So it's good to have a topical that could really target this inverse psoriasis area. And also rapid itch response. In these two studies, both Dermis 1 and Dermis 2. Psoriasis, as you know from Greek, means pruritus, right? Sore. At the same time, for many years, until maybe not too recent, but let's say 20 years ago, the idea was that psoriasis doesn't itch. Plaque psoriasis, pruritus was supposed to be a rare complication of psoriasis. I had to write a little chapter in a book about pruritus as a rare complication of psoriasis. Now the idea completely changed, and a lot of patients with psoriasis have tremendous itch. So we're looking for biologics or topicals that could help the pruritus, and roflumilast could be one of them. And here, again, pictures at treatment with roflumilast cream, 0.3%, Dermis 1, Dermis 2. Baseline, week 2, week 4, week 6, week 8, you see tremendous improvement. And then on the pictures on the lower level, you see the inverse psoriasis treatment. And again, really, really nice going from IgA 3 to 0. Efficacy and safety with these two studies, Dermis 1 and Dermis 2, primary outcome, investigator global assessment, the status of 0, clear, or 1, almost clear at week 8, and significantly improved lesions in the intertriginous area, again, to emphasize, with very minimal adverse events, like site reaction, GI symptoms, headache, which are well-known for phosphodiesterase 4 inhibitors, and slightly increased among roflumilast versus the vehicle groups. The last topical I'd like to discuss, even if we said that topical steroids may cause some side effects, is a combination of calcipotriene and betamethasone, the propionate cream approved in 2020. This is a different technology of putting together this topical, PAD technology. An indication is plaque psoriasis in adults. The dose is 0.005%, 0.064%. And here the mechanism of action, of course, is the same as the topical steroid and same as the calcipotriene. And you have the article from the Journal American Academy of Dermatology reference there. And the PTA technology is unique because it's oil in water dispersion from multi-molecular layer of organized surfactant, oil and water, robust structure around oil droplets, limiting water contact and thereby protecting active ingredients in the oil phase against hydrolysis. And efficacy and safety, again, if you look at the graph, much improvement compared to a placebo. I want to mention also that this combination apparently helps. There are some studies from the company targeting interleukin 17, interleukin 23, and also interleukin 8, which is an interesting finding because, as you know, interleukin 8 is associated with neutrophils. So maybe it could have, but this is definitely off label, but maybe it could have some also help in, or some role in neutrophilic dermatosis. So here you see baseline, week one, week four, week six, week eight, tremendous improvement, and also in the scalp. Scalp is another area where some of these treatments the companies are targeting to show potential improvement. So adverse effects are similar to the other calcipotriene and betamethasone dipropionate products. And the most common adverse effect, local site reaction, with no adverse reaction occurring at frequency than more than 1%. Oral medications, many patients, or let's say quite a few, sometimes don't want to do injections, they want to take a pill. And here, the new approved oral medication, deucravacitinib, September 2022, tyrosine kinase inhibitor. Again, indication is moderate to severe plaque psoriasis in adults, and the dose is 6 milligrams orally once daily with or without food. Mechanism of action, it works on the target of the TY. Okay, two, and here the efficacy, you see the blue is the deucravacitinib, much better than placebo, and the potential competitor orally of apremilast that we prescribe quite frequently, and is some patients really like it, but looking at these graphs, this is an improvement. And here also the efficacy, PASI 75, SPGA 01. You see these graphs are definitely better than placebo. And then when in this study, the patients were switched from placebo to the medication, it joined the same line. And you have the reference, Journal of American Academy of Dermatology, the study of Dr. Armstrong. So poetic scalp psoriasis, similar pattern of much improved at week 16, and then the placebo, and then when the arm of the placebo switched to the medication, similar results. And again, as you know, it's good to have some treatments that target a specific area of the in the body of the psoriasis. Adverse effects, we should concentrate mainly to the ones of the other oral medication, the apremilast, and you see, again, numbers look better, much better. Headache, diarrhea, nausea. I don't have many patients with headaches, definitely some complaining of diarrhea after taking apremilast. Intravenous medications is a tremendous progress. Spesolimab, approved September 2022, interleukin 36 receptor antagonist, and this is an excellent treatment for generalized pustular psoriasis flares in adults We know that there are different, at least four types of pustular psoriasis, from von Zumbus to the LaPierre pustular psoriasis. So Zumbus is very serious problem. And apparently with this medication, yesterday we had a talk from Professor Lars French, the chairman of dermatology in Munich at the University of Miami, and quite a pretty big experience with this treatment. In 1 day to 2 days, the patients with severe symptoms and generalized pustular psoriasis feel so much better, and they could be even discharged from the hospital. So the dosing is intravenous infusion, single 900 milligram dose over 90 minutes. And the mechanism of action is works on this interleukin 36, which is a completely separate, as you know, type of interleukin that the usual 12, 23, 17. So this was established a few years ago that generalized pustular psoriasis. It's a different disease compared to the typical classic psoriasis subtypes. And even the interleukin is totally different. It's 36. And here, approach to assessing cellular skin biomarkers associated with interleukin 36 pathway in patients with generalized pustular psoriasis, palmoplantar pustular psoriasis, and healthy volunteers. And the numbers are all in favor of this interleukin 36 targeting infusion treatment. Spevido is the name, and more of the information about how patients get better. And here we see at week one, after day eight. But again, listening to the expert, to dermatologists that prescribed this medication already quite a few times, in 1 to 2 days, the patient are already better, regardless of the open label phase or the double blind phase. So a very effective medication for a very severe subtype, although very different psoriasis. And endpoint, primary endpoint, postulation subscore, week one, response, number of patients, difference versus placebo, spesolimab versus placebo, definitely extremely much more effective. And please forgive me, but I want to emphasize again that it's nice to see that the patients do very well, confirming this data, but at the same time, more real medicine, real-world medicine, which I think is the way we should go, and we're already going very soon. And more of this primary endpoint, placebo versus Spevigo. Risk difference after treatment initiation. Patients at onset of pustular clearance as early as day two, which is something Professor Lars French, chairman of dermatology in Munich, Germany, and president of the World Congress of Dermatology next July in Singapore, confirmed from his personal experience. So an extremely effective medication. This published in the New England Journal of Medicine. And here we see this incredible improvement, week one, of a very severe subtype of psoriasis. I want to mention it again. At the University of Miami, we have an inpatient service dedicated to dermatology only, and we see these patients coming from all over Dade County, Broward County, Boca Raton, Palm Beach County, and so we struggled before, but now potentially with this medication, struggled. We made them better, but it took quite a few days of admission, hospitalization. Now it looks like very fast we can clear and improve the generalized pustular psoriasis. And here, baseline to week 12. Adverse reactions. Asthenia, fatigue, nausea, vomiting, some pruritus, but very minimal numbers if you could check compared to placebo. oral herpes, dyspnea, but again, not so much. Injectable medications, so the one that we're all waiting for the approval, because it really works very well in Europe, or where it's approved, is the bimekizumab, failed FDA pre-approval inspection, but hopefully will be approved very soon. The idea is that targeting interleukin-17A and interleukin-17F, we should be able to have the tremendous fast clearing, PASI, maybe even 100, again, hopefully will be approved very soon. The indication plaque psoriasis, psoriatic arthritis, 320 milligram every 4 weeks, approved in the European Union, where it's doing really, really well. And I want to mention another speaker we had Thursday at the University of Miami, Dr. James Kruger from the Rockefeller Medical Center. He gave us an incredible review of interleukin-17 and focusing on interleukin-17A and F as the two main targets of the of this medication, of course, but also to improve and clear the psoriasis. So here, the mechanism of action, TH17, interleukin-17 and F, interleukin-17 F and A are the culprits, and target cells, patients improve tremendously. Efficacy, you can tell the bars, the pink one, is definitely really high, and the placebo is 1%, 1.2%, so tremendous efficacy, and also safety. There is some, as you know, I'm sure already, some oral candidiasis concern, but apparently not so common and treatable, easily treatable with an antifungal oral medication. So be ready trial, phase 3, PASI 90, achieving 19.1% of patients that receive bimekizumab versus 1.2 in control, as you saw from the previous picture, and adverse effect, 61% versus 41% at week 16. Most common nasopharyngitis, but the one that it's a little bit of a concern was at least it's oral candidiasis. We know that interleukin-17 is involved in oral candidiasis. We know this syndrome called APSED, cutaneous mucocutaneous candidiasis, and where there is definitely an overexpression of interleukin-17. And even with when the interleukin-17A inhibitors were approved, we at least in my clinic, we were always checking the mouth, the oral mucosa of the patient, looking for oral thrush with, at the beginning, some concern, but then it never happened. So hopefully it will be the same here when it's approved. So those were recently approved medications in psoriasis, and as you know very well, we already had so many biologics working extremely well. I want to say all of them. We probably need all of them for our patients for different locations: scalp, nails, inverse psoriasis, genital, palmoplantar. At the same time, I'm going to get even more now. So at one point, how are you going to decide which biologic to prescribe? It's a tough question. So to me, the idea is pathology. And pathology means a simple punch biopsy, 4 or 5 millimeters, that you can save in formalin. Nothing fancy, no special molecular pathology assay, frozen tissue, immunofluorescence. No, a simple biopsy in formalin, paraffin embedded, formalin. And then you can ask for immunohistochemistry stain. So what's immunohistochemistry? Immuno, antigen-antibody reaction. Histo, tissue section. And chemistry, enzyme label. And this is a simple cartoon showing the tissue antigen linked to the primary antibody, and sometimes there is a secondary antibody. So as I'm sure you know very well, immunohistochemistry is an ancillary test. After we do a clinical observation of the patient, and sometimes, not very often in psoriasis, we do tissue sampling. We send it to the pathologist. The pathologist look at it for morphologic evaluation, and then if necessary, like in undifferentiated tumor or other condition I'll show you, or their ancillary test. And this ancillary test, a lot of people believe that only for diagnosis. The pathology is something that you just need to diagnose basal cell or a nevus or melanoma, but it's not true. Pathology is a very dynamic specialty, dermatopathology, where you can not only make a diagnosis, but you can also give therapeutic and prognostic information to your clinician. So immunohistochemistry in dermatopathology, contemporary use. Make a diagnosis, but also tell your clinician about prognosis and predictive outcome. And we do this easily every day. See, this is a Merkel cell carcinoma, blue cell, could be a lymphoma, could be even a basal cell, but we order a special immunohistochemistry stain called CK20 that has a specific pattern, perinuclear dotting, and we confirm Merkel cell, and then to confirm it even more, we can order another immunohistochemistry marker, chromogranin, and you see them both there. So predictive test. So that was a diagnosis. Then we can predict. And now what's the definition? Predictive test allow for a more specific therapeutic decision-making based on individual patient, the disease, and the molecular diversity to achieve personalized precision medicine, which is the present and is definitely the future. You know, we think that not every patient are the same. So we need this personalized, targeted, tailor-made treatment. And here, an example of predictive. This is an acrine carcinoma, which is very similar to breast cancer. And when a pathologist received a specimen for breast cancer or acrine carcinoma, is I want to say in a mandatory way, he or she asked to do immunohistochemistry. Which one? Estrogen receptors, progesterone receptors. So we need this test to address the treatment. And there is also HER2, Herceptin, because there is a triple negative, double positive, triple positive, and the treatment is completely different. We can do the same in psoriasis, and I want to show you how. So pharmacogenomics is predisposition to disease and response to therapy. And pharmacogenomics includes a pharmacodiagnostic and these predictive markers. And this is all pathology. Again, not a static diagnosis only under the microscope, a piece of glass subspecialty. So for target therapy, we need to identify the candidate patient. I heard a previous lectures of giants in psoriasis asking, which biologic do you decide to use? How do you profile your patient? So how do we profile our patient? Of course, we have experience with some working better than other, and maybe we go to that one, but again, as I said earlier, a more objective decision could be probably important. And you see the targeted drugs are usually monoclonal antibodies, like all these monoclonal antibodies in psoriasis, and small designer molecules that are now coming also along. And here are some examples of immunohistochemistry preparation. And you definitely need a good lab You need some kind of a research-oriented lab, not routine, to do just keratin S100 for these markers that I'll show you. This is CK20, Desmin, HER2, estrogen receptors. And you see how nice and easy it is to identify the immunohistochemistry. When you have a good lab, it's either positive or negative. There's not much effort to make. Positive is brown or red, and negative is the background that is completely clear. And we already do this in dermatology, in mycosis fungoides, for example. This is one of my patients that had mycosis fungoides, improved with the treatment for quite a few months, and then suddenly came back with big tumors, away for a while, and then came back, and tumors, plaques. So I did a biopsy, and the biopsy on H&E, you see it there with the epidermis, a tremendous infiltrate in the dermis of all these atypical lymphocytes. And the idea of the biopsy was to rule out large cell transformation. You know, of course, you know large cell transformation is a pretty bad prognostic change. But luckily, we have immunohistochemistry, and we have an associated treatment. So when you see large cell transformation, you ask the lab to stain for CD30. CD30 is a marker of lymphomatoid papulosis, of anaplastic large cell lymphoma, but it's also a marker of large cell transformation. And when the cells of mycosis fungoides are positive for CD30, you can stain with, you can treat with brentuximab, and the patients do very well. So melanoma, same thing. There are biopredictors. We can stain in pathology, and now there are very good treatment for melanoma, Zelboraf, imatinib. So why can't we do this in psoriasis? What are the biopredictors in psoriasis? TNF-alpha, interleukin-17, interleukin-23, PDF-4, and now many more with these new drugs coming along that we want to prescribe, but we want to know if they will work or not. And what are the targeted drugs in psoriasis? Anti-TNF-alpha or TNF-17, 23, PDA4 inhibitors. So this is a patient that came to our clinic, psoriasis, years ago, when we only had the TNF-alpha inhibitors available. There was a period of time before ustekinumab was approved that we only had etanercept, adalimumab, and infliximab. And the other two TNF-alpha, not so much use in dermatology, maybe abatacept also for the arthritis. But this patient came July 2007. We treated him with an anti-TNF-alpha inhibitor, and as you can tell, he improved tremendously. See? But before starting the treatment, I did a biopsy, and you see here this perfect textbook H&E stain of psoriatic form hyperplasia with confluent parakeratosis, with no granular layer, some dilated capillaries in the papillary dermis. And at the time, I had the marker for TNF-alpha. And we stained immunohistochemistry for TNF-alpha. So the brown that you see there on the picture next to it, it's all TNF-alpha. As I said, you need a really good lab to do these studies. And at the time, we were just starting, so we cooked the dermis, which is gone. But in the superficial dermis, all that brown is TNF-alpha. And that, for us, was the reason why the patient, I don't know if I can go back, improved so much from July 2007. Mentioned this before, I want to say it again, just to make something light. The improvement was much faster. From July 2007, November 2007, it was already clear completely. The picture we took was much later because at that time, I don't do cosmetics, dermatology, but I remember I was always intrigued by these cosmetics lectures, not so much anymore probably, that always had before and after picture very different. In the before, the picture, the patient was looking really sad. The picture was dark, no lipstick. And after the cosmetic treatment, this patient's radiant, beautiful light, lipstick. I never understood that. So here I said, I want to do exactly the same. But this patient always came back to follow up with a yellow underwear, a red underwear. And finally, March 2008, he came with the same one. So we told him, stop, freeze. We're going to take a picture now, and we'll show that we don't do the usual cosmetic little trick. So pyoderma gangrenosum, another example. It's a diagnosis of exclusion, but this is classic pyoderma gangrenosum. And we know this is a group from my brother in Italy that responds really well to TNF-alpha treatment. We wanted to know why with pathology. This is an excisional biopsy done by my chairman, Dr. Robert Kirzner, who I think he spoke here yesterday or the day before. It's a beautiful excision showing the epidermis, the ulcer, the undermining, lots of neutrophils. You see some brown granules, but we stain for the same TNF-alpha marker, and you see many more brown granules. The ones in the H&E, it's a lot of immunosiderin. And this is a higher magnification, but if you stain again with TNF-alpha immunohistochemistry, you see tremendous positivity, and maybe you understand better why pyoderma gangrenosum ulcers respond to TNF-alpha treatment. And now, to avoid confusion, we have a TNF-alpha immunohistochemistry marker in red. Also, years ago, I did a study on interleukin-17 immunohistochemistry with some colleagues. And I want to show you here, this. I mainly did it on the plaques in the legs of my patients because of my experience with a biologic, the skin cleared completely many times except 2-3 stubborn plaques in the legs. So I said maybe it's a different phenotype. I ordered the interleukin-17 immunohistochemistry stain. And here you see some of these keratinocytes really dark. And that's interleukin-17. And this is a good stain because, as we say in pathology, there is a built-in control. The endothelial cells are also staining. Scalp psoriasis, same thing. Dr. Craig Leonardi came up with 2 back-to-back articles about interleukin-17 in the same issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, saying that with interleukin-17, the scalp psoriasis improved tremendously. And we did a study, same thing, biopsy. This is not a great immunohistochemistry result because it's too much background for my, if I could say, standards. But again, you see the nuclei of the keratinocytes that are staining the side. So I want to say we prove it. And here, a paper we published, psoriasis targeted therapy, characterization of interleukin-17A expression in subtype of psoriasis. I did this project with one of our former residents, Dr. Eric Lee, who is now successful private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we got five biopsies from 5 different subtype of psoriasis stained for interleukin-17A, and we showed that the postular and palmoplantar psoriasis were more overexpressing the interleukin-17A. And we thought that this could help the clinician to optimize treatment because when a patient presents with palmoplantar psoriasis, you can go straight to interleukin-17A inhibitor. At the same time, I can say Novartis, a few years later, we did this in 2015, and this gesture results were published in 2017. They did a randomized control double-blinded the trial, 205 subjects. We only had 20 biopsies, and they put 205 patients, a primary endpoint, like I showed you before in the graphs. That's why I told you I like the real-world results. And the conclusion was exactly the same as the one we had, that there is improvement with interleukin-17A inhibitor in palmoplantar psoriasis. Interleukin-23 stains are now available, and we can order them. And targeted therapy in psoriasis, you see, you do a biopsy, you stain for interleukin-23, you see that it's overexpressed, and then you decide which biologic to prescribe. And also interleukin 36, I saw you spectacular results with the new infusion treatment, and here some also immunohistochemistry proof that generalized pustular psoriasis, you biopsy, stain with interleukin 36. This was published in August 2021. It proved that it's there. And to me, you're more confident that the patient will respond because you know that the culprit interleukin is there. So to conclude, skin biopsy, 4 or 5 millimeters of a psoriasis plaque could be a really good help to be able to decide which new drugs, the ones we review, and old drugs in psoriasis you can prescribe. And this will help the patient for something called personalized care. So in clinic, you get a tissue sample, make a histologic diagnosis with your dermatopathologist, and then ordering ancillary tests that are now commercially available. And again, you need a good lab, but when you have a good lab, it's not so difficult to do it. You can get a, it's a big word now, biomarker, but all these interleukins, all these little target proteins, and you can get a guided therapy, same as in oncology they do for cancer, in hematodermatology they do for large cell transformation, and you can even monitor the results or see that if something changed in the response of these patients, because not so often, but sometimes patients doing really well with one biologic, and then suddenly 2 years later, 3 years later, the psoriasis comes back, they don't respond anymore. So you can re-biopsy and see something change, and additional treatment, second-line drugs. So finish a little earlier. This is the end of my presentation. I wanted to review the new drugs, and at the same time, if possible, give this message that maybe in the future, with so many very effective treatments, we would need another way to identify the perfect candidate, perfect patient for our treatments. So I want to thank you for your attention, and even if I love the United States, I became a U.S. citizen, Miami is a spectacular city. This is my last message, and thank you very much for your attention. Okay, so first question is, there doesn't seem to be enough efficacy of PDE4 inhibitor ointment, Eucrisa, for psoriasis. What's different about roflumilast cream that works well for psoriasis? To tell you, I don't have much experience yet, but the studies show, I show you the graph, and it looked like that it worked better. The mechanism is very similar. So I want to see my patients, maybe I have my email address. If you want to email me in a couple of months, I respond to you with my personal experience. When do you choose ducrativine versus apremilast? Is there an ideal patient for each? Apremilast, I have many patients on apremilast. Many are doing really well. Some, not many, but a couple could not tolerate the headaches. One, the depression. And then diarrhea is always pretty common, at least for the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So ducravacitinib, I'm very excited about prescribing it. And I think right now, I'm thinking of a little more severe, if I could say this, maybe it's not appropriate, but a little more severe psoriasis than the one that usually prescribed the apremilast. I want to say the first question, maybe not so much, but this question is definitely, if I could say, confirm my idea that with a biopsy, we stain for the marker, and we see if we go one target or the other. Why are there so many different primary endpoints in psoriasis clinical trials? Is one more important than another? No, to me, they're all important, but not to disappoint you, all my studies I did are on pathology. And the company supported, we just published a study, if I can divert for a minute, in the American Journal of Dermatopathology of interleukin-17A overexpressed in lichen planopilaris. So we didn't do any primary endpoint for lichen planopilaris, but we told the company, maybe this disease, there is no treatment, there are a lot of lymphocytes, maybe these lymphocytes express interleukin-17A, and they supported our study, and we prove it that this interleukin-17A overexpressed in the lymphocytes around the hair follicle in lichen planopilaris, and it's published. You can read it in the American Journal of Dermatopathology of last month now. So I think they're all important, the primary endpoints. At the same time, I, as a former pathologist and still dermatopathology, I rely a lot on objective demonstration of all these markers. How do you order immunohistochemistry stains? It's very easy. We have a form. So every day when I get my slides, I read slides every afternoon. I see patients in the morning 2-3 times a week. On Wednesday, we have our academic morning. So usually I see patients Thursday, Friday, and sometimes Monday. Wednesday, we have our academic morning. Every afternoon, I read slides. I have a form to order deepers. And next to the deepers, there is a column for immunohistochemistry. We write the markers. The technologies take the form at the end of the day. And it takes 24 hours. If you have a good lab, in 24 hours, the next day in the afternoon, you get these slides stained for immunohistochemistry. Sorry, why did bimekizumab fail FDA pre-approval? I don't know. I think it was very unfortunate to ask the company. I know in Italy, my brother is prescribing it. It worked really well. And hopefully, I heard maybe by June, we'll get it back. We'll get it approved. When do you choose tapinarof versus roflumilast? Is there an ideal patient for each? I already prescribed tapinarof to quite a few patients. Roflumilast, only a couple of patients. One thought from another of a big expert in psoriasis, unfortunately, that I didn't mention on this lecture is the insurance coverage. One slide from Dr. Kerdell, I don't know if you know him, said access is king. So they're both very promising. They're both probably work really well. One issue is the insurance right now because they're all approved very recently, and when they're approved recently, insurance don't know them, the cost is very high. So I hope I can use both at the same time and then make my own decision which one works better, different areas. We mentioned the inverse psoriasis. How do you treat folliculitis due to Vtama, or how do you decrease the folliculitis? Again, one potential difference than folliculitis could be milia, not really folliculitis. folliculitis to decrease, you use very small amount, enough to be absorbed right away and to treat the patient. And to treat, I like clindamycin foam. I'm not going to mention the name, but clindamycin foam to me penetrates the hair follicle really well, and hopefully once or twice a day will improve the folliculitis. How do you choose which biological therapy you're going to use in someone who only has psoriasis versus psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis? So this, we do it every day, I think. There are some biologics approved for psoriatic arthritis. In this case, definitely, we follow the clinical trials. Adalimumab, for a long time, was the king of psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis. Now there are other biologics that work very well. In my experience, you can see the name Tremfya, secukinumab, they work well on psoriatic arthritis. Are special stains accessible to us? How can we find what lab to use? Yeah, if you work in a dermatology office, I'm sure you do biopsies every day for nevi, for basal cells, and you send the biopsies to your lab, and your lab should have an immunohistochemistry ancillary lab. So you can ask them to do them. And then when I was in pathology, we used to have at the University of Miami something called PRS, Pathology Reference Lab, for this unique type of studies. So maybe in your area, you can look for some pathology reference lab where they have the markers and also the cost. Some of the established immunohistochemistry markers like S100, keratin, are not so expensive because it became pretty routine. These other more unique inflammatory markers right now are not so common, and maybe they cost more to the bill of the patient, of the healthcare. But still, you can negotiate, talk, and I'm sure they'll be able to do it. How have you used the Mind the PX test, and how accurate do you see it working to pick out the biologic? So this for me was mixed feeling. I was extremely happy and at the same time a little disappointed. Extremely happy because it's the same concept I dream about and I try to convey today, that you check the plaque psoriasis. You know this test, right? You put a tool on top of a psoriasis plaque, leave it for a few minutes, and they scrape, and this tool scrape is like a little torch, scrape the plaque, and then you send the result to, you send the outcome to a lab, I believe in San Diego, and after a week, they tell you three different, one of the three potential cytokines, TNF-alpha, interleukin-17, interleukin-23. I think it's great for the personalized, tailor-made medicine. I'm frustrated that I was not able to be faster than them in having my own market system for many different reasons. But at the same time, I talked to the company and maybe we can collaborate. I think it's going to be the future. I think I don't have any stocks with them. I don't even know them closely, but I think it's great, and maybe they can go even more specific than just three markers, DNF, interleukin-17, and interleukin-23, and I think at one point we also expand to other disease, like atopic dermatitis, and maybe even if it's a disease of some ulcers, hidradenitis suppurativa, so I like it a lot. That's it?
That's it. We want to thank Dr. Romanelli. That was absolutely excellent.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation. Yes.
We did have a few more questions for you, if you have just a couple minutes.
Sure.
We're going to take a 10-minute break and meet back here at 4 o'clock for the esteemed Hillary Baldwin. And if you could just meet back here at 4 o'clock, and if you have any other questions, just Dr. Romanelli sounds like he has another minute to answer those.
Yeah, many minutes you want. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.